Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What do we need to consider when we weigh the long-term implications of real estate development? Even with the ongoing mortgage slump and the rising price of fuel, new development continues to expand the footprint of the North Texas Metroplex. But a new documentary about three decades of development near Austin's beloved Barton Springs may serve as a cautionary tale. The film opens with a poem by Wendell Berry.
I walked the deserted prospect of the modern mind, where nothing lived or happened that had not been foreseen. What had been foreseen was the coming of the stranger with money. All that had been before had been destroyed. A new earth had appeared in place of the old, made entirely according to plan. Some small human understanding seemed to have arrayed itself there without limit, and to have cast its grid upon the sky, the stars, the rising and the setting sun. I could not see past it but to its ruin.
That is a clip that certainly sets the tone for the documentary The Unforeseen. And director Laura Dunn is with us this hour to talk about the film and about the impact of development on Austin's environment. Laura, welcome to Think.
Oh, thanks for having me.
In so many ways, this film really simply comes down to the question of who has the right to control the environment.
Who has the right to control the environment?
Yeah.
I think control is a big theme in the film. Early on in the film, one of our key characters, who's a very notorious developer here in Austin, arguably the most vilified developer in Austin over the past 30 years, named Gary Bradley, the film is sort of seen through his eyes in a lot of respects, and I think control is something he talks about right out of the gate in the film, where he talks about growing up in West Texas and being subject to nature and really wanting a life where he could have more control. And so he sets out to make his fortune and becomes a real estate developer. And everything about real estate development, in a lot of senses, is about controlling the natural landscape so that you can build houses and live off it and make profit. And so there's very much the theme of control in the film, and it's right there from the beginning.
Yeah, he makes this comment at one point that the only thing that he really needs God for is the water.
Yeah. He's talking about Circle C Ranch, which is at the time was about 4,000 acres in southwest Austin. It was one of the largest subdivisions in development in Texas at the time. And he's laying out how development happens and what you need for development. And he says, you need the roads, you need the sewer lines, and while you're hearing all that, you're seeing these beautiful graphics that my husband actually did, Jeff Sewell, a Dallas native, and you're seeing all of this and how he sort of takes control of the landscape and harnesses the natural resources to build a large, massive subdivision. And it's interesting because there's a side in there where he says, first I need water, and that's a God thing. I can't do anything without water. And as long as I have water, I can do just about anything else. So there is this manifest destiny theme there, but he recognizes that it's not that simple. He still is subject to powers beyond himself.
Filmmaker Laura Dunn is my guest. Her documentary, The Unforeseen, is playing now at the Angelica Film Center in Dallas. Laura, for people who are not personally familiar with the area, can you talk a little bit about Barton Springs? What's there naturally and what has changed over the years?
Sure. I mean, the state capital of Texas was established here in Austin largely because of the water. And so if anyone hasn't been to Austin, they might be surprised to find this oasis in the middle of Texas. There's a huge underground aquifer. It's one of the largest in the state, and it's been deemed the most sensitive and most fragile in the state. It's a limestone aquifer. It's called the Edwards Aquifer. And it extends all the way down to San Antonio, and it goes out into further west of Austin. But what you have is where that underground cavern of fresh water accumulates, and Barton Springs is where that underground water springs forth at the surface and fills this beautiful, naturally spring-fed swimming hole right in the middle of Austin, Texas. It's the only geological feature of its kind in any urban center in the U.S., as far as I know. And it's unique. It's beautiful. It's remains 69 degrees year-round. So it's been the center for the community for many, many generations. Before air conditioning, it was really one of the core places where people would gather in the summertime. So it's got a rich history here. It's not only the signifier of the entire health of the aquifer system here, but it also has become a catalyst for environmental activism in Austin over the past, well, for Austin's history, as far as I know. But our film focuses on the past 30 years.
Robert Redford, the actor who is a producer on the film, learned to swim there at Barton Springs.
Yes, he did. His family, his mother's family, is all from the San Marcos area, Central Texas. His grandfather built the stone home right on the banks of Lake Austin, right in Austin. And so as a child, even though he was living in Los Angeles with his parents, as that landscape was decaying, he came to Austin during the summer to visit his grandfather. And he reminisces in the film quite eloquently, I think, about how he learned to love the natural world right here in Barton Springs and in Central Texas, and how it formed the foundation for him as he went out into the world and to this day continues to talk about the importance of preserving the natural world.
What's really sort of chilling is the parallel he draws to Los Angeles, which is the other place that he spent much of his childhood. And he remembers that being a place where you could smell flowers at one point and there were elements of the natural world. And that's completely gone from that landscape now.
Yeah, it's an important part of the film, I think, because he talks about how there are some communities where it hasn't happened yet. It being development and sprawl and pollution taking over any natural feature that's left. And so he's putting Los Angeles out there as kind of an omen for people to look at and consider and think about before we lose what's special about our communities. And I think Austin's at that crossroads. It's a place that has beautiful natural features, and, you know, in parallel, Los Angeles did as well. And yet, because of all of that, you've got more and more people coming, and the growth threatens the very thing that drew us here to begin with.
You have a lot of contemporary footage in the film, but there's also a lot of old newsreel stuff. And you have a piece, at least one segment of the film, taken underneath the springs when people are sort of swimming around in 1996. Can you talk about what that looks like?
Yeah, in 1996, it was actually before I was in Austin. The Save Our Springs Alliance in Austin had some beautiful footage shot then, and they donated it to the film. And it's really incredible to see, because it looks like the Caribbean. It's crystal clear, it's blue, it's aquamarine, it's incredibly lush. You can see eels and schools of fish and turtles. And I mean, if someone just showed it to you and asked you, where do you think this is, I think you'd probably think it was somewhere in the Caribbean. And, you know, that's how Barton Springs used to look. It's not how it looks today. And, you know, a mere 12 years later, it looks very differently now. You don't see the kind of life in it. You don't see the marine life. It's much murkier. Now, it's still a beautiful place to swim, which I want to emphasize. It's not lost yet. But when you can see that transformation over such a short period of time, it's meant to really, you know, signal an alarm that we want to protect this before it's too late.
What impact did opponents of development around the springs anticipate even 30 years ago from putting homes and businesses all throughout that area?
What did the opponents anticipate? Like, why did they protest?
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, they anticipated more of the same. I mean, when there started to be some development in Austin in the mid to late 70s, for example, Barton Creek Square Mall. Barton Creek is a creek, one of the many creeks in the watershed that feeds Barton Springs. And so if you're building upstream from Barton Springs, the runoff from that development will run into the creek beds and will emerge at Barton Springs. So, you know, I think people first came to arms. One of the big catalyst moments was when Barton Creek Mall was built, a big mall right near Barton Creek, and they basically cut off a mountaintop. This was in the late 1970s. And there was incredible sediment and runoff that went into the creeks. And so that was one of the things that people responded to. And so as there continued to be more development in that southwest area, right over the Barton Springs portion of the Edwards Aquifer, people anticipated more of that happening, more pollution to Barton Springs. and Barton Creek and the whole beautiful aquifer system there. And that's what really signaled people and initiated a lot of the environmental activism.
There was a point when the city agreed to halt proposed development. Let's hear an archive from a marathon overnight city council meeting that's shown in the film. The first voice we will hear is former Austin Mayor Frank Cooksey.
Used to be from any angle, the Capitol would loom there tall and magnificent and give one a sense of a base, a center, an anchor to living. I was driving down South Congress the other day, and there sat the Capitol, looking like a little fire plug. My greatest disappointment is that we weren't able to summon enough civic responsibility to hold back the onslaught of the developers. Amen, John Henry.
I got it. 4 a.m.
Just a little old country lawyer.
I'm a nurse.
I have a PhD in chemistry.
Healthcare professional.
I am a mother. I am an Austinite.
We did change. I mean, we had done vote counting before the hearing, and this thing was going to pass.
It would be total political suicide to stand up in the face of that.
If you are genuinely concerned about this.
I mean, we all got to look in our hearts right now.
The kind of commitment and concern you have about Austin, Texas.
We could go to the Hill and we would go see the devil himself to protect Barton Springs.
I move that the city council deny this planned unit development.
Councilmember Erdy seconded. Yes.
So we hear that clip, Laura Dunn, and we think there was a great deal of protection that came in around Barton Springs, but it didn't last in the way that proponents hoped it might.
Right. What you hear was an all-night hearing in 1990, and it was in response to Freeport MacMoRan and Jim Bob Moffat coming in and buying up a bunch of land right on the Barton Creek watershed and post savings and loan crisis. And flipping it around and turning it into proposing to turn it into a big development, which was the Barton Creek development, which has happened since. But nonetheless, the community came up in arms and protested this. They turned a city council who was going to vote for the development after an all-night hearing. They unanimously voted against it. And what happened after that is there was a green city council was elected. And there was a citizen petition that passed, and that was the Save Our Springs Ordinance, which limited development over the entire watershed region. So it was a big victory in terms of the environmentalists. But as you see in the film, what happens is people at the state level, at the state legislature, pass grandfathering bills. And this is a statewide issue in terms of private property rights. That was what was used to argue to override the local ordinance. And even though Ann Richards vetoed it, once George W. Bush came into office, he signed it, and so it grandfathered all of these developers to be able to develop at a much higher rate than they would be able to under the local ordinance.
So essentially the local ordinance was made null and void by the state legislature under George W. Bush as governor.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of detail in this kind of stuff, so I wouldn't say null and void. I mean, I think the Save Our Springs ordinance did do a lot to limit growth. But it was trumped in large sections of the aquifer region by the state legislature.
Filmmaker Laura Dunn is my guest. Her new documentary is called The Unforeseen, and it's showing now at the Angelica Film Center in Dallas. We'll return to our discussion in just a moment. If you want to get on the line to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, a way to keep your greatest two tools, imagination and curiosity, sharp.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is director Laura Dunn. Her new documentary is called The Unforeseen. You can see it at the Angelica Film Center in Dallas. If you'd like to join our conversation, the telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. Our email address is think@kera.org. It was such an interesting choice, Laura, to use Gary Bradley, who, as you have described, is one of the most reviled developers in recent Austin history, as the sort of central character in the film, the one person that we really get to know as an individual. And I have the sense in watching the film that as a person, you sort of liked him.
Well, Gary, when I first met Gary, you know, I first started researching this story. He was all over the history of it. And so I wanted to meet him, of course. And when I first met him, you know, he's this quintessential American character. He's very Texan. His office was in a castle overlooking the state capitol with a larger-than-life, you know, satellite image of Austin behind him, with his developments drawn, mapped out. And he was very charismatic. He was very compelling and articulate. So, of course, as a filmmaker, you know, I'm looking for people who are living their lives in big, bold ways, and that's certainly Gary Bradley. So in that sense, of course, I immediately thought he would be a wonderful character in the film. And I think after meeting with him a few times, it really occurred to me that as an environmentalist coming to the film with that bias, perhaps I could make a film that would serve a new purpose and add to the discourse if I tried to see it through developers' eyes. It would add a lot more tension and complexity to the story, and it would illuminate my point of view so that it wasn't just another polemical documentary. And, you know, also, I really do believe in loving your enemy, so to speak, and there's a proverbial power in that, and I wanted this film to transcend all of the unfortunate polarities, politically and otherwise, that I think keep us from really looking at the universal nature of the environment, and I want to draw new people into the debate, and I didn't want to condescend to people who might have different opinions than me, you know, and Gary is a really important spokesperson for that message, in my opinion.
Well, and at one point when we see him really beaten down by his detractors, I think, and you can hear it here, we feel genuinely sorry for him.
Well, what in the hell do you know, Bill Bunch, Mr. Berkeley lawyer, about development, or about me, or about Texas, or about private property rights, or what things that Texans take pride in? I mean, I know a lot of Texans that still take pride in the fact that, you know, when we became a state, we didn't give up all our land to the federal government. You know, we didn't, like so many of the western states. It's a big deal to us. I mean, there's a lot of pride in being a Texan, and a multi-generational Texan. And some people can like that or not like it. That doesn't make any difference. It's still the truth.
Did you have the sense, Laura, that Gary Bradley tried to love his enemy when it came to this issue?
I don't know. You know, that's a good question. I think that these issues are hot button issues for people, and so I think Gary's a good person, and I think he cares about people no matter what side they're sitting on. You know, I think he ultimately wants to transcend all of that too. But you know, These are hot issues, and he certainly has a lot of anger and resentment in a lot of the environmentalists, because he would argue in some respects it led to his downfall, and he would argue unfairly so. But, you know, I think that clip that you played is really important. I mean, there's a long history of sort of the maverick Texan who doesn't want the government controlling their land and their lives, and that independent spirit in Texas, I think, is wonderful. And I think it's worth celebrating and protecting in Texas. And so I don't think I don't think we want to be pitting private property rights against natural resources. I think we want to find a way to respect the need for both, and rather than oversimplifying one side or the other, really try to respect both sides and come to a better understanding about how we can move forward in a way that's sustainable for Texans.
Well, yeah, you talk about sustainability because the truth is Austin is and has been a growing city and people have to live somewhere. What kinds of practical alternatives were proposed to the sort of single-family residential building that Bradley and his colleagues were putting in place?
Well, there's a lot going on in Austin in terms of green building, and I'm not an expert on it, but we need to be critical of all of it so that we can realize what's truly about sustainability versus what is just greenwashing for the sake of of more short-term profit, you know. So I think that there is a movement in Austin to keep development from being over the watershed in particular, for people to live in smaller houses, more in the central core of Austin. There's a lot of building going on downtown to try to keep the traffic and the sprawl from, you know, from expanding. But I think what you really have to talk about is the rate of growth and slowing down that growth. And this is something I can talk about because I'm a filmmaker. If I was a politician, there's no way I could bring that up. It's sort of a faux pas. But you're looking at some of the growth in Austin is growth that is incremental growth that is above and beyond what would naturally occur otherwise, because you have people who are invested in making money off of that growth at the Chamber of Commerce, putting lots and lots of money into public advertising and campaigns and corporate subsidies to lure new people to Austin. And there's a plan going on right now at the Chamber of Commerce where they want to lure, they want one new car on the streets of Austin every 22 minutes. And so I think you have to look critically at where that growth is coming from rather than just say the growth is inevitable, we've got to deal with it. I think it's not necessarily inevitable in the way a lot of the politicians portray, in my opinion.
Well, that's an interesting point, because not only do politicians talk that way, it seems as though we have sort of formed conventional wisdom around the idea that growth is something desirable and that every city should automatically not only want it, but strive for it.
I think so, and I think what we try to do in the film is examine and pick apart what does growth mean. I encountered that very thing when I was doing this research, that growth is just good. That's just an assumption and kind of, you know, the American way. And certainly, if you talk about kinds of growth, it is good. But there's negative kinds of growth as well. And so I wanted to take it out of the political discourse and actually talk about growth and the definition of growth. And if you analyze growth from a biological point of view, there is growth for the growth for the sake of growth, which is can be called the ideology of a cancer cell. When there's growth that is completely unchecked and all you want to do is grow as much as you can, as fast as you can, without any limits, well, that's a metastasis. That's fatal. And so if you look at these growth systems with a critical eye, I think you can start defining what is good growth and what is bad growth. You know, and also William Grider in the film, who's a wonderful journalist from The Nation, who contributed a lot of his wisdom to the film, he points out if you look at GDP, if you look at just the way we measure economic growth, it does not account for the depletion of non-renewable natural resources. It doesn't account for the destruction of communities. It just measures money coming into the system. So I think we really need to be talking about what are our values as a community and how do we want to look as a community in the future rather than just let's grow as much as we can as fast as we can.
The cancer metaphor is really interesting, and I'm wondering, you mentioned that your husband did the graphics in the film, if that idea really came to you as you were working on the research or when you started looking at maps and the way they would go from being these sort of pristine satellite images to things that were covered with this growth, if looking at the picture was what would put that idea into your head.
Well, you know, the idea was in my head from a while back because I had done a film when I was in grad school about Cancer Alley in Louisiana along the Mississippi River and the relationship between environmental toxins and cancer clusters in children. So, you know, cancer was a big thing in me thinking about how the pollution of our environment maps out onto our own bodies. But when I was studying the way growth happens and I was researching and I was talking to cancer researchers to get to explain to me the way it happens biologically. And then in parallel, I'm looking at these development maps where you see the roads and the water lines going in first and literally pumping the resources to make that development happen. And it looked like cell growth. It really did, because the way cancer grows is it recruits new blood vessels to its system, and it keeps recruiting new blood vessels, and it's that continual supply of blood and oxygen that makes the cancer grow beyond what would be normal healthy cell growth. And so certainly there was a direct parallel just in these the way the systems look. And I didn't think I was really stretching things or it literally was just a visual parallel that made itself clear.
Yeah, of course, the one, you know, glaring limit to that parallel is the fact that very often we treat cancer by removing it entirely. Once development has happened, once there are homes and buildings and schools and cars parked, it's very hard to go back to nature.
It is, although nature is quite renewing if given the space to do so. And certainly I'm not advocating the removal or destruction of all of these homes and communities and neighborhoods. I'm merely saying that when we look towards the future and we look towards all the developments that are yet planned and yet to be done, we should look at it with a critical eye of what's really going to be sustainable for our children and our children's children in terms of the natural resources. And it's not just about having a beautiful pool to swim in. It's about the health of all of the water resources in a semi-arid climate that's prone to drought. And you know, can we sustain these numbers and these patterns of growth? I don't think so. So it's our responsibility to look at that and analyze it critically and try to think of new ways to build community.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Our email address is think@kera.org. An email from Aaron in Fort Worth says, what makes Laura a truly brilliant filmmaker is her ability to hold up a complex picture for her audience to wrestle with. You can't watch this movie without learning something not just about your society, but also about yourself. Was that process similar for you, Laura? Were there things that you didn't expect to discover about how you felt about this issue?
Yeah, there were. And thanks to Aaron. I take that comment to heart. To me, I love documentary. I love nonfiction filmmaking because I get completely disoriented in the process. I believe ethically that as a documentarian, I have to immerse myself in these issues and this subject and learn something. You know, a lot of filmmakers just, and I won't mention names, but I think come into a project, they already have their position lined out, and they're just looking for people to, you know, to paint that picture for them. Whereas I really try to abandon my views as much as possible and get disoriented by people and their points of view and try to see it through their eyes. So I think what you end up having is a film that reflects that process. I would say I learned a lot about development. I learned about the complexities of it. I learned about the necessity of it. I learned a lot of respect for people who work in that, who work in all these different realms. And I learned a lot about science and hydrology and the history of this community, and so on and so forth, the political process. And I think when you really study things and you study what people do, you realize everyone's trying to do the best they can, and everyone's, you know, there's all kinds of amazing innovation in all directions, and it does make you think that there's a lot more complexity and resolution to these issues than just good guy, bad guy. And I think that's important to have a mature point of view on it if you're really going to engage the problem.
Yeah, another thing you've done is avoid vilifying the people who have moved into these developments. In fact, you have one young couple that one might think that your position would be to sort of say, you know, how selfish to live in this area or to have moved in here. But they're a very sympathetic family. You sort of understand they're just trying to find a nice place to live for themselves and their kids. Did you struggle with that? Did you think about maybe finding a family that reflected the values that you thought sort of went along with this kind of development?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, I have family who live in those developments, and so I can't just sit here and self-righteously say they're bad, I'm good. You know, maybe I can afford to live in Central Austin, or maybe I can live in a smaller house because I don't have five kids and or whatever. You know, I mean, I think that the economics are such that a lot of people can't afford to live in Central Austin now. And so I just wanted to find people who lived in these developments to talk about why they were there. And I found the Perez's, the couple that you're mentioning, to be quite genuine and sincere. And you know, it's like, well, it's not for me to judge these people and demonize them. That's, that would be just wrong. You know, they have their reasons for being there. And if we're going to really look at these issues, you can't just try to say it's them over there. I mean, you know, these are social systems, the economics are all intertwined, and perhaps they can't afford to live in Central Austin. So I think it's, you know, again, I mean, I feel strongly. I would call myself an environmentalist. I feel strongly about these issues. I'm not a fence sitter. I'm not trying to be balanced or neutral in a way that doesn't take a stand. However, I think you have to be respectful to people and their choices and look at those, because then you can get closer at where we really are and how we can move forward.
How is this debate playing itself out sort of on the street or at the water cooler in Austin? Are people who work in the same office standing around arguing about development, or is this sort of not top of mind for most people?
It's a good question. You know, I think it's less top of mind now than it used to be, which is part of why I think the film is important, trying to, you know, catalyze that discourse again. I think there's a lot of new people in Austin, and I think a lot of the old guard environmentalists have burned out and have moved on, and so we really do need to have a new generation of activists explore these issues. And but it's a big issue. We just had some city council elections, and the environment, in particular, Save Our Springs Ordinance and Barton Springs, were all over some of the tighter contests. And so I think you see it continue to play out in Austin politics and Austin kind of identity. But it is changing here pretty fast, and when you have a lot of new people coming in that don't have that sense of history or place, it's a little scary, you know, for people like myself who really want to keep Austin the kind of special place it is. So that's the point of the film, to really kind of reinvigorate that dialogue.
Are you seeing in Austin that environmental issues, as in the rest of the country, are no longer so much something that fall along a left-right divide?
Well, I certainly hope so. I do think, because I think that's just silly, but I think it's as much to blame the left as it is to blame the right. You know, I think too many of the people on the left, so to speak, have been so self-righteous and condescending to people who might have differing views. So I think it's unfortunate, and I think we've defeated our own cause in a lot of senses, even though I'm not necessarily left. I'm truly independent. But nonetheless, I do think in the past few years we have seen a growing awareness of issues like global warming, thanks to some of the hard work that's been done on a lot of people's part to make that message clearer. And I think just with oil prices going up and the real estate market being what it is, economics are going to dictate that we start looking at alternative ways to live. And so I hope, even if things have to get worse before they get better, I hope that these issues can transcend those old polarities.
Austin filmmaker Laura Dunn is my guest. Her new documentary, The Unforeseen, is showing at the Angelica Film Center in Dallas. We'll return after the break, and we will take your calls to 1-800-933-5372. If you'd like to send email, that goes to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, a way to keep your greatest two tools, imagination and curiosity, sharp.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Laura Dunn, the director of The Unforeseen, a documentary which is showing now at the Angelica Film Center in Dallas. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. Let's speak to James in Dallas. Hi, James.
Hi. I just had a quick question, and I'll take my answer off the air. I am a small businessman. I have to live somewhere, and I have to do business somewhere. And, you know, not everyone can afford to, you know, do business or live in a multi-purpose, green, high-density development inside some city. And I was just wondering where it would be acceptable and economically prudent for people to live and do their business. Where can new development take hold and it be acceptable? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly what I was just talking about, in the sense that, you know, a community is an intertwined thing, and so you have economics such that a lot of people cannot live in, at least, I don't know about the Dallas area, but because I'm not that familiar with it, but within the central Austin core. So, you know, and it's where are they going to live? And there are a lot of people who end up living on the outskirts of Austin and doing their business on the outskirts of Austin because that's what they can afford. And so I think it's, you know, Ann Richards, when I interviewed her for the movie and I kept pressing her about these issues, she said something I thought was really powerful. And she said, you know, most people they're busy working their jobs, feeding their kids. They don't have time to think about where their water's going to come from. And that's why we elect officials that we count on to be thinking about these issues and really analyzing them. And while I think that the consumer has responsibility, even if you live in the outskirts, you can try to do things to limit your footprint. I mean, there's a million things people can do to try to create a more sustainable environment, no matter where you live. But I do think we also have to put the onus back on our politicians and our elected officials and get involved in our local elections and make sure we're holding them accountable so that they can analyze these problems and quit subsidizing growth and sprawl in areas that simply can't sustain it.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Mike in Rockwall. Hi, Mike.
Hello, ladies. I'll be sure to see your film first chance I get. This is a topic that it's kind of a pet peeve of mine because I believe that urban sprawl and overpopulation is the elephant in the room that really needs to be brought up. It's the root cause of many of our problems. I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I'm 49 years old, and over the years, I have watched thousands and thousands of acres of prime farmland being turned into subdivisions, and I've always said to myself, this is a recipe for disaster. Less and less farmland, more and more mouths to feed. I've watched Lake Levan out here. We had a drought a couple of years ago. It's a water reservoir for thousands of homes. I watched that lake lose 25% of its volume during the drought, and that's the lowest I've ever seen it, and it was really scary to see that.
Wow.
And so, anyway, it's a good topic. I'm glad someone's discussing this. I think it's an important issue, and I'll definitely see your film first chance I get.
Thanks for your call, Mike.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I think there's a part of the movie that you'll really appreciate towards the end because I go into the farmlands northeast of Austin and interview a farmer who's been there for 70-some years talking about the exact same thing you're looking at, so that it's not just about our water resources, it's also just about our food resources. And the farmland's a big, big issue, so I'm glad you brought that up.
Drought has been an issue in and around Austin for some time now, and I guess it's gotten a little bit better, but can you talk about the impact on the water table of increasing population?
Sure. I mean, and in projected population as well, which is scary. You know, we are overdue for a drought of record. Every 50 years or so in this climate, if you look at the last thousands of years in Austin, the hydrogeologists can map out. The last big drought was in 1954, and we are overdue for another deep drought here, and that's very scary, and especially when you've already had the hottest June in recorded history in Austin this year. So, yes, the increase of people is definitely impacting our water table, and you can see that vividly in Austin and in all over Texas. So, and when you look at the projected population in terms of what they're projecting in growth, and it's just the numbers don't match up.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. The email address is think@kera.org. My guest is director Laura Dunn. Her film is called The Unforeseen. Let's go next to George in Dallas. Hi, George.
Yes, hi. Really quick comment. Your last caller touched on it also. The ideology of the cancer cell, growth for growth's sake, that traces all the way back to the 70s with Paul Ehrlich and the population bomb. And he traced pictures, satellite pictures, development along the California coast. There is isolated pockets, and in 20 years, they were all connected. And it brings up the larger issue. You know, you talk about projected population 10, 20 years, and everybody just talks about how are they going to deal with that. And nobody talks about population control. It seems it's dropped out of the conversations from the 70s. So. No, that's just the comment. Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah, a lot of people bring that up when I do Q&As, and I think population is an important piece of the whole. I would just say I think the big way to understand population issues, from my opinion, is to understand resource consumption per capita. For example, you know, a child born in America today consumes something like 100 times the resources of a child born in India. So I think in conjunction with looking at population, I don't think you can just say it's population. I think you have to look at resource consumption per person. And I think every individual can find ways, no matter where they live, to limit their footprint and to scale it down. And I think that's a key component. I mean, a lot of this sprawl is because the average home size in America today is 2,700 square feet, whereas in the late 70s it was 1,700 square feet. So why is it that we need so much more space now and so much more stuff now than we used to? I think that's a big question, and I always want to interject that when people bring up the issue of population.
Is the small home movement something that in Austin is now sort of also taking hold among families, or is it still something that people who are in a position to live in pretty comfortably in a really small space are focused on?
Well, I have one child, and my husband and I have one child and another one due in a couple months, and we live in a 1,300-square-foot house, and we're not planning on moving anytime soon, and I have a lot of neighbors who are doing the same thing. So I can speak from my own little community. I think a lot of people want to live in walkable communities. They want to live in the core of Austin so they don't have to deal with so much traffic. And so, therefore, they're finding ways to do it. And, you know, I remind myself, my house was built in 1927. I imagine there's probably a family of six or so living here. So I think it's really a mindset that you get into that you need so much more space when the question is, like, do you really? And I do see that movement among my own neighbors, so to speak. But I still think the general trend in America is to have bigger, more, and all of that.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Next up, we have David in Dallas. Hi, David.
Hello, Chris. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Good. I saw the film last night, Lori, at the Angelica, and one of your producers, Bill Warren, is an old friend of mine from college.
Awesome.
And speaking as a writer, as a conservationist, and as co-chair of the Green Building Task Force at Dallas City Hall, I want to encourage everyone who's listening to go to the Angelica and see this film. It is a great film, and we are struggling and grappling with these very issues in Dallas on a regular basis. And our Dallas City Council in April passed unanimously a first set of recommendations and ordinances to make Dallas a more green and sustainable city. We'll go back in October with the next set of recommendations, and for the next 2 years, we'll go back about every 3 to 4 months with more recommendations about how Dallas can be more sustainable. And I would like to take all the members of the City Council to see the film. It's just an excellent film, and I want to thank you and Bill for making it.
Oh, thank you. That's great to hear about Dallas, too. It's encouraging.
You've been all over the country. Are you hearing similar stories?
Oh, yeah. We opened the film at Sundance Film Festival in January of 2007, and then my family and I traveled for about 15 months all over the country, and the film went all over the world to film festivals. And then it's played in about 27 cities across the U.S. theatrically. So we've gotten a lot of feedback, and it's encouraging to think that the film is relating to people, but of course it's sad to think that these issues are playing out in the exact same way in communities everywhere. I mean, everywhere from Vancouver to, you know, Cleveland to South Florida to Maui. We went to the Maui Film Festival, and believe it or not, they have the exact same issues. All-night city council hearings, issues with water and drought and overdevelopment along the coastline, displacing native cultures. I mean, you're seeing the same fractal play out everywhere, and the same forces of lobbyists being hired by developer interests to really write the legislation that then gets passed that trumps any kind of local participation in shaping community. So it's the same political process, even though people may have different accents and the natural resources may be different depending on the landscapes. It's the same fractal, without a doubt.
Let's speak next to Michael in Frisco. Hi, Michael.
Hello. Hey, ladies, I am really enjoying the program. I saw the film this weekend with a couple friends, and my question is really, who owns the land around Barton Springs in these really beautiful natural areas, and is there any chance that lobbyists or developers can persuade these owners to sell parts of the land or reduce the amount of space that's already protected?
Well, it's a good question, and you're talking in terms of the watershed that feeds Barton Springs, you're talking in total of about a 350-square-mile area. So who owns it is a big question, and there's myriad answers. Now, right around Barton Springs itself, the city has bought the land right around Barton Springs, so that belongs to the city. And there is a lot going on in terms of the city, you know, with bond elections, and we've passed several bonds in Austin that allowed the city to take taxpayer money to buy up some of those land that remain that developers have not already bought or developed. And there has been quite a bit of of land being bought by the city to on the watershed to try to protect some of it. So, yes, that is going on, and that's a part of the strategy. And there's also something called the Hill Country Conservancy that a good friend of mine, George Kofer, runs, and he works with a lot of developers, and he's trying to work with developers and to raise money to do conservation trusts. So, in other words, for a big 1,900-acre ranch, they may raise the money to buy the development rights of the ranch. That rancher can keep ranching the land, but the land will never be developed. So there's a lot of movement around that to try to purchase up the land that's left. But there's still a lot of land that is slated for development. So, you know, it's an ongoing battle.
Having worked on this and met so many people and talked about this issue, do you have the sense, Laura, that Americans are ready as a society to look at their own individual lifestyles with a critical eye? Or is it a case, as so often happens, that we all tend to know exactly what other people should be doing?
I think you're absolutely right, Chris. I mean, that is so human. You know, you immediately point your finger at someone else. And, you know, I think a lot of people are reflecting on these issues, and I see that. And we all reflect in our own ways, and that gives me a great deal of hope. And but I, you know, I think we have a long way to go. I in the course of making this film, my husband and I were blessed with a little boy, and it really changed my point of view. It really deepened my commitment to these issues. And I try to connect with people on that. A lot of people have children or children that they love and are close to them, and it's as simple as looking at your child and thinking, what are they going to inherit? And I think that's the way a lot of times to get to people, you know, to really consider these issues and try to make changes in their own lifestyle. That may be inconvenient at first, but they're the right things to do.
So do you actually have a harder time than you might have before empathizing with people who say, well, I need 3,700 square feet because I have three kids?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I do. I don't empathize with that, but I don't want to, you know, be self-righteous to those people. I would just try to make a cogent argument as to why I think their choice isn't the right one.
Are you optimistic about Barton Springs, or do you think that this is really something that will not end well?
Oh, it's a good question. I mean, I try to be optimistic. And people ask me that, you know, like, are you just in despair on these issues, or are you hopeful? And I go back to talking about my own kid again, where I say, you know, I have to be hopeful. I can't afford to not be hopeful. When you do have children, I think you understand that. You know, you can't just fall into despair and plan for the worst. But if I look at these issues with real sobriety, I have great concern. And I don't want to say I'm pessimistic, but I don't want to say that I think it's all going to work out, because that might make me too lazy in my approach.
Laura Dunn directed The Unforeseen, which is screening now at the Angelica Film Center in Dallas. Laura, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.